Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Hi, I'm Pete Buttigieg, and this is The Deciding Decade. In spring 2020, the gun reform organization Everytown came out with a report that detailed gun violence in our country. They found that every day, more than 100 Americans are killed with guns, and 200 more are shot and wounded. Our gun homicide rate is 25 times that of other high-income countries. Firearms are the leading cause of death for American children and teens. This issue has risen to the forefront of American politics because of the mass casualty events that have devastated our communities and the day-by-day violence that commands less attention but destroys even more lives. It's also getting attention because of the phenomenal work that groups like Everytown, Moms Demand Action, and March for Our Lives have done. Because there is so much work left to do, it's a great time to have a conversation, and we're joined by one of the leaders who has been doing extraordinary work day in and day out. Today, I'm joined by David Hogg, one of the founders of March for Our Lives, an organization dedicated to harnessing the power of young people across the country to fight for sensible gun violence prevention policies that save lives. In 2018, David, then a senior at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, was at school while a gunman with a semi-automatic rifle shot and killed 17 people and injured 17 others. It was the deadliest high school shooting in U.S. history. Since then, in addition to starting March for Our Lives with his peers, David has written a book with his sister called Hashtag Never Again, A Generation Draws the Line. And he's dedicated his time to fighting for gun legislation and other important causes. Now a busy student at Harvard, he has already accomplished so much and served as a leader, a guide, and an inspiration to many. David, welcome. Really glad to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on there, Pete.
I want to begin just by asking about your journey into activism, obviously born out of trauma, but also I gather you were a very civically interested person as a high school student. What was that moment of propulsion like when you saw a nation watching what had happened to you and your peers and saw that even as a teenager, you had a toolkit that you could use to help turn that into a moment that might lead to a movement that would save lives?
Yeah, I mean, it was Certainly an interesting moment. I think I realized that, you know, shortly after I got home, after the shooting had happened and my sister had gotten home, she was a freshman at the time and she had lost 4 friends that day. The unimaginable pain of that and the amount of crying that I heard made me so physically and emotionally uncomfortable that because for the first time in my life, as my sister's, you know, big brother, I couldn't do anything to make it better. So I decided to do the only thing that I really knew how to at the time. Because of my experience in speech and debate and TV production, I knew that the far too many mass shootings that we've had in the country typically don't last more than a week at most, you know, in the media. And I didn't just want a bunch of talking heads going on, you know, CNN and Fox and stuff, debating random stuff without realizing the human cost of these tragedies. So I decided to go out there to speak for people like my sister who couldn't at the time, so that they would be able to tell their truth and speak about it when they were able to and make their voice heard after they're able to recover some, you know. And to this day, there are still many people, understandably, that haven't, you know, a lot of us will probably never recover fully from it. But that's kind of what it was like as I realized that, you know, initially I went out there to try to tell the story of what happened that day, basically as a journalist. But I soon realized that only showing people the human cost of these things wasn't going to be enough to actually change and try to prevent them. So after I got a text from a friend of mine, I met at his house with a bunch of other people. And that's how, you know, we started talking about doing a march in Washington where we thought we'd get about 90 people and ended up getting just about 1 million.
So one of the things I really admired about what you built with March for Our Lives is an attention to the fact that gun violence is every day. So there are these headline grabbing moments that, let's face it, are more likely to involve more white victims on average than the day-to-day gun violence in so many cities, including my own, where the victims are usually black and brown young men. And you formed a coalition of people who had experienced every different kind of gun violence with a lot of self-awareness. Can you talk about what that process was like and how people with very different life experiences were able to come together when their experiences of gun violence were also very different as you look from mass shootings to what's unfolding almost nightly in so many of our communities?
Yeah, I think that process of coalition building has been one of the most transformative and educational experiences of my lifetime. It showed me, especially, you know, coming from a community like Parkland, growing up in, you know, predominantly white suburbs my entire life, you know, I understood that I didn't understand what happens in North Miami or Liberty City, for example, to refer it to South Florida or anywhere else in the country that experiences gun violence. What we attempted to do is come at it with a lens of humility and understanding that, you know, we don't know the work that goes on there on a daily basis. We don't know what happens with my friends on the south and west side of Chicago that work with the brave youth leaders of St. Savina. One of the most important things that I learned in that process is that sometimes it's just as important as a leader to be able to shut up and just listen and just hear people to understand what they've gone through, because you're not going to get that from the news, because these victims don't get in the news rarely, if ever.
Right.
And as a result of that, you have to realize, like, all of these communities are incredibly traumatized, you know, and what's not going to save them is the history of, like, the intertwining of white supremacy and white saviorship, where people like myself, for example, would come from the suburbs oftentimes and say, here's what I'm going to do to save you and your community because of issues that I'm inherently complicit in, such as white supremacy. You know, I think for a lot of those people, myself included, I'll admit at the beginning, like, it makes uncomfortable because we're taught a history that is heavily propagandized and whitewashed. About the history of white supremacy and its foundations in this country. And I think really what I learned in that process more than anything is don't go to people and say, here's what I'm going to do for you. Here's how I'm going to save your community. You simply ask, how can I be supportive of what you're doing in a humble way? You know, and that's really what I've done.
So being on national television puts a lot of pressure on your humility. And one of the things I think about a lot for you and in your generation of activists is, you're young people, you're in college, you're in a formative stage of your life right now. And yet you also have a level of visibility that a lot of your classmates may wind up working decades to establish. How do you keep focus and how do you think about what you've already established versus what you still need to cultivate just personally in order to grow into the kind of citizen and leader and advocate that you aim to be in the long run?
Yeah, I think it's certainly difficult because, you know, most 19, 18, 19, 20 year olds, you know, I was 17 when the shooting happened. You know, most of us don't have 1 million people or more seeing every mistake that we make publicly. And that's, it's really difficult because, you know, in my opinion, a lot of learning is just a series of mistakes that you learn to stop making over time. And I feel a certain responsibility as a young person to admit to those mistakes when I do make them. And another lesson that I would say that I've learned through this process of learning how to lead by looking to really amazing, mainly women actually, that are the predominant leaders in organizing I've seen, get very little, if any, of the credit a lot of the time. By looking to them, I've realized that one of the most important things as a leader to do is know that it's equally important to know that you're right as it is to be able to admit when you're wrong and be okay with that and learn how to recover from that and have that validation of people around you that expect you to learn along the way. And luckily, I have a great family in March for Our Lives, you know, of activists and young people of all different races and classes, you know, from all over the country that, you know, now really are some of the best friends that I've ever made in my life that are, you know, helping me learn with that process and learning to call me in when I do mess up, because I do, you know. I think the other thing too is realizing that the important thing is that the work gets done. It's not so much the credit. So one thing that I try to do a lot of the time is always try to give credit to the people that I think are really doing the work, because it's never really just me, at least in activism. Is like, there's a big problem with this like cloudivist stereotype within Gen Z, which is this belief that there's some activists that do this work because they want credit on social media or they want a following, when really that's the opposite of why you should be doing this. Like, you're doing this for other people. And what I try to do is just constantly shine credit to our team and other organizations too. I think in the nonprofit spaces, you know, it's understandable that there's competition for funding, but I think it's important to highlight the work that especially is being done and has been done before groups like March for Our Lives were ever here in the first place in those predominantly Black and Brown communities, and highlight them and, you know, share the spotlight to help create a rising tide for all of us, because it's only going to work if we're all working together on this.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. And retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, for product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
This is a live debate with a lot of the Gen Z activists that I talked to. Not long ago, we talked to Renee Otero, who was featured in this film, Boy State, a remarkable young activist who participated in this program that was all about civic education and walked away from it drawing two conclusions. One, he really wants to be involved in the world around him. And two, he wants absolutely nothing to do with politics. I see something a little bit different in your approach, but also during the summer of response and reaction to the murder of George Floyd, a lot of tension over the question of whether, you know, voting and what happens at the ballot box is kind of the right destination for a lot of this activism. So I'm wondering, how much have you wrestled with that? Do you feel like there really is a kind of debate with two sides, or maybe something more complicated going on? You know, how do we square the importance of politics with the awareness that this is not something that politics alone can fix?
I think a lot of the time, my kind of metaphor is that we're trying to compare like an Allen wrench, I guess you could say, to like a hammer. When we really like, we have a toolbox for social change making. And in my opinion, it's like we have, yes, there are times when like we have to protest, there are times when we have to organize, there are times when we have to lobby, there are times when we have to heal and take care of ourselves. There's also times where we have to vote. But I see all of these things as basically different tools that we can use to try to pressure the system to get better over time. And we can't leave out any one of those because these communities across the country don't have an option for their own survival of not to use one. We have to get this change as quickly as possible because people are dying on a daily basis. Let's say like protesting and organizing at times might be like a hammer and the crowbar that helps, you know, just bust open the door of social change might be voting in combination with, you know, registering a lot of other people to vote, but voting consistently to add that leverage on continuously over time. It's not a or question like, do you vote or do you protest? It's an and question of like, how can we vote and how can we protest to create this change as quickly as we needed to? But that's how I kind of see it is, you know, we just can't leave out any of these tools and we got to use everything that we can. And to leave out voting, especially, you know, if I think back to even people like John Lewis was here, who we talked with right before the march and his experience with voting and the how much they've had to fight to get that right. And young people too, you know, 18-year-olds have not had the right to vote since after the Vietnam War. And we have to use that right because it's not permanent. We've seen time and time again, it is so much easier to steamroll over the rights of the people to be heard than it is to open it up and enable everybody to be heard.
So you've been obviously very deeply involved and formed by activism around common sense gun legislation. But I know from talking to you that your mind ranges pretty far. What other issues command your attention right now, either as a student in the things that you're being exposed to, or in your life as an activist and advocate and citizen?
I think one of them is realizing that, you know, gun violence is an issue around laws, but it's also, it's a symptom of much bigger injustice. And we need to address the reasons why young people are, especially in communities most impacted by systemic injustice, are picking up a gun in the first place. It's a lack of opportunity. You know, in my opinion, the reason why communities like Parkland don't have shootings on a daily basis isn't because we have the most police. It's because we have the most resources, right? And we need to realize that, especially white people in this country, have a lot of uncomfortable truths to uncover about the fact and privilege that, you know, many of us have and the way that that impacts other communities by starving them of resources a lot of the time. But I think confronting the systemically racist history of our country and realizing that if we acknowledge the kind of intolerance that were expressed by, frankly, many of our founding fathers, that doesn't mean that we're anti-American. That means that we care about all Americans. We want to build a better country for everyone, right? Where everybody is treated equally. And we're not just blindly following this belief that, frankly, that all the founding fathers were really great people. Like they weren't. There was a lot of white nationalism that they expressed and talked about. And that's uncomfortable for a lot of white people. We have to confront those like incredibly dark truths. But I guess looking at the way that that injustice plays into it and plays into gun violence as a whole and how we can build a better country from that. Because I think of it kind of like Dr. King famously talked about three evils of society. And I would add a fourth one to that. The evils were militarism, poverty, and racism. I would add environmental destruction to that with climate change and everything. And I really see the level of gun violence that a community faces or an indigenous nation faces as a consequence of the level of injustice that they've faced. That's why, for example, Indigenous nations have the highest rate per capita of police brutality of any group in the country. And they have one of the highest suicide rates in the country. It's because they've faced incredible amounts of, at times, literal starvation. And also, metaphorically speaking, too, in terms of just a lack of resources. And I think of the role that it's played in Black communities, especially that were redlined in the 1930s and 40s, and the way that that's impacted them, the way that the United States, you know, never actually paid reparations to Black Americans. We've had these systems that have been built around our current economic system that really are not meant to rehabilitate people, never really have been, because they're founded and rooted in systemic racism, like prison, for example. And arguably, you know, considerable amounts of our policing system that we need to take a hard look at and figure out how do we completely reimagine, in my opinion, public safety so that everyone in every community is kept safe.
That makes me want to ask about something that I think is so important in efforts to bring about change, which is how you make it possible for people to get through that discomfort and change, right? How to make it okay for people to change their mind. This was, I think, a big part of what happened in my state during the fight over equality under Mike Pence, for example, when there was some really awful LGBTQ legislation. And I saw the importance of giving people who were a little bit whiplashed by change, maybe grew up very conservative, but also were guided by a sense of compassion or at least questioning what they'd been told, you know, giving them a way to kind of beckon them onto what I viewed as the right side of history versus trying to drag them there. And with so much at stake, whether it's around LGBTQ equality or racial justice or gun violence or any of the issues we're talking about, I'm sure you've seen efforts that backfire and efforts that succeed in terms of creating that space for people. So what have you learned about what it takes to make it even possible for somebody to move, to change, to shift, to grow?
One of the best examples that I've seen of that was when we talked to some of the counter-protesters, you know, on tour that would show up at our events, armed to the teeth or whatever with an AR-15 or multiple handguns and, you know, like a gun, a hand knife, and, you know, their assault weapon, you know, strapped over their shoulder or whatever, protesting and screaming that we are crisis actors that, you know, were paid by George Soros. Also, that's not even the case. Like I it's been 2.5 years that I still, you know, it's just crazy conspiracy theory.
you're not making money off of this one.
No. In some of those cases, those people ended up actually being really bad people. I didn't realize, for example, that some of them were Proud Boys that were protesting us or at times neo-Nazis. But by talking to some of the other people, you know, that were out there, I realized that, you know, in one conversation that I had explaining that creating comprehensive gun laws doesn't mean taking everyone's guns away, you know, and talking about why we believe what we do. For example, the reason why the shooter at our high school was able in part to keep his AR-15 and legally own it was because he was able to legally buy an AR-15. He was, you know, he was 19 at the time or whatever. He was under 21. You know, I've talked to my dad about this, who's a former FBI agent, and he's a really interesting conversation to have with a, you know, family member that's so, you know, worked in law enforcement for decades. You know, you can't even use those weapons like inside of a house if you're in a raid or something, because a lot of the time, like if you shoot that, it's so powerful, it's going to go through the person you're trying to shoot through a wall and into some kid possibly in another room, right? So what are you actually doing like with that weapon? And talking to them about that and the fact that, you know, even though the shooter at our high school had made threats and stuff, had signs of, you know, possibly being dangerous, there was nothing that could be done because there was not a law on the books that could have taken his gun away through due process, obviously, and a right to counsel, because he obviously shouldn't have had an AR-15 in the first place if you're threatening to kill people. And they're like, well, I agree with that, you know, and there were a number of areas where we didn't agree, but overall, a few of them actually ended up crying because they realized, like, you know, the hate that they had was really misdirected and that, you know, we're human beings too, and we just don't want kids to die anymore. The difficult thing is those conversations can't only be had by me or any one person. It needs to be had by all of us. It needs to be had with our family members and have these uncomfortable conversations and explaining why we believe what we believe and how we believe this represents a better country for all of us, where everyone can be equal and ensure the domestic tranquility in every community.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about, you're a student at Harvard. I remember my time there about 20 years ago. I was there when 9/11 happened, and I still find it a little bit disorienting to speak to students who were born right around that time. I wonder if you thought to the future, 20 years from now, when you might be encountering a student who was born right around the time of the killings at Parkland, and what would you hope that they would be working on? If your generation delivers what needs to happen on gun violence, what would you hope a future generation of activists would be working on?
You know, I think, first of all, I hope that in the future, we look back on school shooter drills, for example, the same way that we look back on, you know, air raid drills during the Cold War as completely irrational things that really, you know, we're trying to get citizens to protect themselves from, when really it should be the government like working to change these things. And I hope that that person is working towards figuring out how, especially with the advances in technology that we've seen over the past century, how we can make sure that everyday people have a fair distribution of the amount of work that they're putting into these systems. Because I would rather have a country where people have healthcare that's affordable and are able to go to college and have a good job and have their fair cut of the effort that they put in to make this country one of the largest economies in the world. And they get their fair share of that. I would like to see our country become one that works at prioritizing overall happiness for its people and, you know, peace and safety for them and opportunity for anyone that comes to our shores too, including immigrants. I think it can get better. We just got to get a lot more young people involved that try to promote human compassion and decency and humility.
Like so many, I am, of course, deeply impressed by David and his March for Our Lives peers. It's not just what they've achieved at their age, it's what they have achieved, period. We can all look to their work on gun violence prevention as a roadmap for how to turn tragedy into a movement, into action. The reality is, most Americans agree on things like background checks. We can make this happen. But as David said, it's not just gun violence and gun laws that we need to tackle. The violence that we're seeing in this country is part of a bigger pattern of injustice, racial, socioeconomic, and more. So we can't stop, even if we round the corner on gun legislation. I know that David Hogg and March for Our Lives won't be stopping, and we can continue looking to them for hope and more leadership. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.